Hello and welcome to our programme celebrating 40 years of the Chamber Orchestra of Europe. I'm Simon Mundy, and in this episode I'm talking to some of the conductors and one of the soloists who has stood in front of the orchestra in the last decade or so. Yannick Nezet-Séguin, Robin Ticciati, Sir Antonio Pappano and Janine Jansen. I began by asking Yannick about the start of his relationship with the orchestra.
I think I couldn't quite believe that I had been invited to guest conduct COE because the real beginning of the relationship was during my year of following, observing, studying with Carlo Maria Giulini when I had this great privilege of kind of being in his footsteps for a year. And that was in 1997, 1998. And right at the start of this was a tour of Giulini with COE, mostly in Italy, with rehearsals in Ferrara that I could attend. And so I got not only to observe and learn from the great master, but I got to observe and learn from the great masters of COE. And I chatted with these musicians and admired them forever since and bought all of the recordings and couldn't stop listening to Arnoncourt recordings of Beethoven and Schubert with Claudio and so on and so on. So many years ago, I mentioned that to my managers. I would love to guest conduct Chamber Orchestra of Europe. And she said, well, one doesn't ask to guest conduct Chamber Orchestra of Europe. One is only invited to, so there's nothing much I can do. So, okay, well, so I don't know exactly how it happened, but when I was invited to guest conduct was in Lisbon at the Gulbenkian, and the very first rehearsal was Mozart 40. The most intense, exhilarating, not necessarily completely together, but it felt like we all threw ourselves and each other in the music. It was just insane, an insane experience for all the right reasons.
The overture from Mozart's Così fan tutte, an early recording Yannick made with us. He explained how working with the orchestra helped him approach the early romantic repertoire too, and how the COE let him explore.
As a musician and as an artist, COE was helping me rethink or reassess the given thoughts or preconceptions that we have in the early romantic repertoire and some of the later ones. And I believe this is why we focus on recent years on big cycles like Schumann and Mendelssohn, because it's not only a question of size, it's just a question of approach, a question of listening, a question of inner balance, a question of also quickly be able to get rid of anything that is the collective memory. I mean, I value it and I believe that there is a collective memory in COE and it's very important, but it's equally as important to be able to recognize that a group has a collective memory about this or that phrase or this or that movement or that composer, and yet be able to collectively quickly move to a different direction. And that is what's more difficult with established fantastic symphony orchestras. The memory, the collective memory sometimes gets, it's so ingrained that, and there's something beautiful about it, but when one wants to explore something else and go back to the score and reinvent the conception of a given style, then we spend a lot of time trying to dust off that tradition in order to move forward. And I feel that with COE, we always start from a point that is almost a, I wouldn't say a neutral point, but because people in COE have all very strong ideas individually, and that's what makes it so great. But everyone is willing to explore it differently. And that mindset, so fresh, and I want to add also so humble to the music. COE is never about showing off how great they are. Never, ever. It's always about showing off how great the composer is. And that is a subtle yet essential part of why it remains an absolutely unique ensemble in the world.
Sir Antonio Pappano came to the orchestra much later in his career, when he'd already been music director at the Royal Opera House in London for many years. He explained that, like Yannick, he finds the experience of working with the COE rejuvenates his own music making.
What fascinates me about it is this combination of original members, people who have been there a long time, and new members. And the mix is just incredible, because you have a real history there and you have a school of playing that's developed. I think more importantly, it's a school of listening, which is so acute and so unique, I find.
Robin DiGiotti, now music director at Glyndebourne Festival Opera, had plenty of experience with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra before he came to the COE, but he felt immediately that he would have to be on his mettle.
There is no question that there is a mystique, there's a nobility, there's a royalty, there's something golden about even the aura, even something about the idea of entering into that sphere. So, of course, you have to forget that when you first meet them, and you have to go to the music and go to what you feel is true and right. And I remember we were rehearsing in Cologne, and it was Brahms Haydn variations. And I remember that on the program also was Bruch Violin Concert with Alina and Haydn 104 with some Widman. So I wanted to bring sort of a bag of tricks just to see where we were and what we all felt of the music, and certainly what they felt of me and I felt of them. And it was extraordinary. But you know what's wonderful? And I was thinking about this before we were talking. I felt the incredible potential of the orchestra, but I felt I didn't unleash it in that first time I met them. I felt everything to do with the idea of sound and rhetoric and phrase and movement and the way music speaks is there. But somehow it needed time. And I think it was on the times afterwards. Then there was a trust, I relaxed, and then I think since then, you know, going to Dubai and getting dirty with Beethoven 5, Mozart 40, Beethoven Violin Concerto, being able to have space to really work actually on one composer with them. I think they saw a little more of my musical mind and my hands, my shape, and I was able to demand and ask. And I think from that second time, I just thought this feels like a moment in my life that I want to cherish, but also really importantly, develop.
Talking to Sir Antonio, I wondered whether the bond he forms with the COE was similar to that that he builds as a pianist with the singers he accompanies, a very intimate sense of collaboration.
Well, it's a more intimate experience for sure, because of the dimensions. But these are top-class musicians. You know, you got to have something. You better offer something to them that's of interest, you know, that they can latch on to. I think that there's no question in that way. You very much have to be the conductor. In some way, to an even greater degree, you have to be even more of an inspiration, because to a lesser degree, the element of, you know, just getting it together is less of a problem, obviously, because of the dimensions, than with a large group where, you know, by the nature of the thing, you have people that are, you know, what seem like miles away from you. and somehow you have to, you know, get it together. And that's part of the job. But with a chamber music, with a chamber group, that's less of a problem. So you're getting in, you have to get to the nitty gritty. You have to get to the music making.
The question of whether the sound is inherited by the orchestra or developed by the conductor is one of the constants of concert life. Yannick Nezet-Séguin has the principal post with both the Philadelphia Orchestra and New York's Metropolitan Opera. We discuss this quality of creating a particular flavour.
We talk about the Cellini sound and Abbado sound and Harnoncourt sound and Haitink sound, and you have a very transatlantic attitude to music. You've got the American orchestras and the Canadian orchestras, and then there's the Chamber Orchestra of Europe. Do you look for a different sound in Europe from the sound that you look at for in either the US or Canada?
Mm. See, I recognize what you're saying about Giulini sound and Abbado sound and Harnoncourt sound, and I do believe that you're right. I recognize it when I listen to their recordings, but honestly, what interests me the most is what the ensemble has as a sound. And I believe that what the conductor is bringing, or what I want to bring when I'm there, is yet another ingredient to help change the sound, like you will change the taste, adding in a recipe a crucial ingredient that, even if you don't change any of the existing ingredients, will change the flavor slightly. But I never look at having COE having a Yannick sound or the Philadelphia Orchestra having a Yannick sound, because I think we get the sound that we have together. And I try to respect that initial conception from the sound that goes according to every style and every composer. Yes, there might be, when we play together Mozart operas, there might be a brightness that's there, but also I hope a flexibility, because that's what I feel about these pieces, which with COE was so easy to get. When we did Schumann together, there was something, I would say, very bipolar about it. And because that's what I believe in the core of the music. So the sound that we will get will be with this kind of almost manic attitude towards the music, which I believe is at the core and center of these symphonies, and so on. So it's hard for me to describe what would be my sound, but what I know is that what COE, as I was talking earlier about collective memory, what over the years the great collaborators of COE and the great musicians of COE have been able to cultivate together is something that was also part of the way I imagined the music when I was a young conductor or a student, by listening to all of the recordings. So one has to decide then what is... it's almost like a chicken and egg question, you know, what my aspirations to do Beethoven after Harnoncourt are, because I, of course, heard these groundbreaking interpretations back in the 90s. And when I conducted Beethoven with them in Edinburgh about 10 years ago or 8 years ago, and also in New York, I remember we felt like there was an Harnoncourt, but later, kind of a 2.0 Harnoncourt together in the approach of Beethoven. And I believe that's just a combination of the history of COE and my ingredient that I can bring.
Robin Ticciotti says he's not so much bothered either by the need to create his sound as the right sound.
I think it's about specificity of sound. And it's specificity of sound for the composer and for the moment. Well, one program which got moved me so much was I was desperate to take French music to them, and this Fauré Palais et Mélisande we did, moving into Les Nuits d'été and then Lint Symphony. And in that program, you have three totally different sound worlds. And so there isn't a specific sound that I want from the orchestra. It's always attached to the composer.
One of Dvořák's Slavonic Dances, Opus 72, conducted by Sir Antonio at the 2019 Bologna Festival, recorded by Rai.
My first experience with them was doing a piece that, in the beginning of their existence, Claudio played all the time, and that was the Brahms Serenade, Opus 11. But they hadn't played it for yonks. And it was like coming, you know, like a homecoming to them. And I can imagine, you know, them saying to themselves, who is this squirt? Who does he think he is, you know? But actually, you know, we had such a fabulous time that I was re-invited. And so that's how it's going at the moment.
We went on to discuss what he enjoyed about working with a chamber orchestra compared to the symphonic and operatic forces that command most of his attention.
I must admit that although I'm constantly working on the biggest scale imaginable, I much prefer it when it's smaller. You know, I have to say, it's not the repertoire, it's the immediacy, it's the clarity, it's the transparency.
With Robin Ticciati, I asked about some of the repertoire he'd like to conduct in the future.
I think with the years of Berlioz that I did with SCO and my love with Colin Davis when I was 13 and David Cairns, I've given it a rest in the last years with symphony orchestras. I mean, there's some pieces come by, you know, Damnation of Faust or Big Romeo and Juliet, but I think to hear this orchestra play the King Lear overture, to hear this orchestra play the love scene from Berlioz, Romeo and Juliet, or even the whole piece, L'Enfance de Christ. Can you imagine the chamber chords, the quality of those wind instruments, and this idea of shape in the strings, where some orchestras kind of go to sleep, where you could feel the orchestra, they would bring such detail. So there is really the contemporary world, there is French music, but, and also, there's such a tradition of Brahms and Schumann that goes from Haitink, Yannick, and Harnoncourt. But I think, of course, as a conductor with that orchestra, one, you've thought so much about the mining and size of Brahms and this 10-8-6-6-4 and of Steinbach and idea of phrase and ebb and flow. And it will also be a joy to go to those composers as well. Simon, it sounds like the list is endless, and it probably is endless, which is hopefully no bad thing either.
Finally, violinist Janine Janssen sums up her joy at playing with the orchestra. After she speaks, we'll end this episode by listening to her playing the slow movement of Brahms' Violin Concerto, recorded in the Concertgebouw Amsterdam with the late, great Bernard Haitink for the hall's 125th anniversary, broadcast on NPO Radio 4.
Well, I mean, it's just the way that the Siri makes music. It's just the attitude to making music. It's so extremely flexible and so full of life and detail, and it doesn't matter even if there would be a bigger orchestra. It's just this kind of ears, you know, and just reacting and just wanting to communicate and make music. It's completely wonderful. It's how it should always be.